Okay, Bahar B'chul Kosai, what we're going to talk about is part of the brachos. I've been trying to concentrate on the brachos. I've noticed that the Ben Ish Chai, when he goes through his Perushim, tries to only translate the brachos part of the parsha, not the curses. He tries to say the curses are whatever they're going to be, but when it comes to the brachos, to explain exactly what each bracha represents, it seems to be an idea that the Ben Ish Chai is saying that you might as well try to translate this part. Don't worry about the curse. Whatever happens, happens. Here's what the pasuk says. Chav Vav He. It says, V'hisig lecham da'ish es batzir. The threshing floor. You'll be working on the threshing floor all the way until the times of the harvest. Ubatzir yasig zara. And then the harvest will go all the way until the times of the seeding, until you plant, which means that it's just going to keep going and going and going. You'll never stop. V'achaltem lachmecham l'sovan. Here's what we're concentrating on. You'll eat your bread with satiation. You'll be full after eating all of your bread. Bishavtem levetach bartzachem. And then you'll sit in surety in your land. Everything will be perfectly fine. You'll be able to live in your land without any problems whatsoever. So there's so many different parts of this pasuk that really are difficult to understand over here. Rashi explains that what it means to eat your bread and be satisfied is the following idea. You eat a tiny little bit and that food expands in your stomach and you feel like you're full even though you didn't eat that much. That's a tremendous bracha. You never have to eat a lot. All of a sudden, you'll just eat just a tiny little bit, and that's good enough. It's a tremendous diet. But aside from just being a diet, it means you won't need much. You won't need much at all. Now, obviously, if a food is very dense and filled with everything good, it's obvious that a person is going to feel fuller once they eat it. That's right there. As opposed to, let's say, a bereka, where you eat a bereka, and there's so many air pockets inside that bereka, that once you eat it, yeah, you feel full for the first couple seconds, maybe, but then all of a sudden it opens up, there's nothing there. You could take a whole bereka and squeeze it down and make it into a tiny little olive, and there's nothing there. If you have a dense food, that's even better. So maybe the bracha is v'achaltam lachmecham l'sova. You should eat your bread and you'll be satisfied. That the bread will be so dense, so thick, with so much in it, it's going to be such a thick paste, such a thick dough, that you're going to be full immediately as soon as you eat just a tiny little bit over here. Maybe that's one idea. I'm sorry? So, very good call. With the mun itself, that's a spiritual food. When you're dealing with spiritual food, which we obviously do not understand, I can't tell you how that would have been there. This is saying even your normal food, the regular food that you eat, nothing special, just your regular bread that you eat, you'll be fine with just a little bit and you won't need anything more than that. That's the idea behind it. But yes, spiritual food, what's going to be with the mun? That's a good call. There's definitely something else going on over there with that. Now, the question everyone asked on Rashi is obvious. Look at the beginning of the pasuk. The beginning of the pasuk says, you're going to have tons of wheat, tons of barley. You're going to be sitting in the threshing floor all the way until then. You're going to be working on your food all the time, which means you're going to have tons of grain, tons of food around. Why do we need this bracha? If you're going to have all this food anyway, why do you need this bracha that just a tiny little bit is going to be good enough for you, but you don't need that. You have tons of food anyway. So what's the point of this bracha over here? What's the idea that you're trying to get over here? So the Moshe of Zakenim brings up a very, very strange Gemara in Erevin, Pei Gimel Beis. Says the following. It says, eating less than a certain amount for a meal will hurt your stomach. If you eat less than the shear that you give for challah, a certain amount, right, just a little bit, let's call it just for whatever it is, a handful for your meal, and that's it. You don't eat anything else. That actually makes you more hungry. It hurts you more than it helps you. There are certain times where doing something in the wrong way makes it something bad. This is the idea, says the Moshe of Zakenim. If you do this here, we're going to tell you that even though you're eating a little bit, you're not eating a lot, it's going to make you feel full and you won't have any ill effects. There will be nothing wrong with your stomach, even though you're not filling your stomach to its capacity. Now, the idea is like this. Everybody knows that eating until you're entirely full where you're stuffed and you can't put anything down your throat is extremely unhealthy. The gastric juices of your stomach don't get to work. There's nothing there. It fills up and expands your entire throughout your entire stomach. That's not a good thing. That means you can't digest it well. It doesn't go through well. You don't go to the washroom well afterward. That's not a good thing. But to have just a little bit also is too much. That means there's too much going on in your stomach. That's when your stomach starts to growl and whatever, make those sounds, because all the stuff that's going on there, right, it's too much for it. Here, we want you to have just enough. Enough so that there's more food in your stomach, but not enough that it's there. Here's the pshat. Over here, we're going to get a little bit of food. It shouldn't be enough. It definitely shouldn't make you full, but it shouldn't even be enough for your stomach to work. Here, we're telling you it's going to be okay. To help understand this, I'm going to give you what happens by Noach and on the Teva itself. What did the carnivores eat when they were sitting on the Teva? We all know that Noach was stuck on this Teva for almost a year, basically, or maybe a year and a month altogether. And he had carnivores on it. There was no question there were lions, tigers, bears, etc. on this teva. There's no question whatsoever. What were they eating? What were they eating? So the simple answer is just like the grain was able to be preserved, so too there was meat that they brought on the table and that was preserved also. Again, if God can do a miracle that the grain preserves for 1 year, that's able to be held for 1 year, then why wouldn't he be able to do a miracle that meat would be able to be preserved in 1 year, even if you don't have refrigeration? It's not like that far-fetched of an idea, but that's one idea, one way you could go through. The Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to say that the lion, along with the other carnivores, I guess, had a fever. And that fever caused them to lose their appetite. So for almost a year, they were able to survive off almost nothing. So they didn't really eat anything. They didn't have anything there. That's an impossibility in most ways by most animals. You can't survive off nothing for a year. But that's how the Gemara puts it over there. Rav Wolfson in Sefer Emunas Techa says, based on different sources, there's a different idea. The carnivores became herbivores for a year. They didn't eat meat. They only eat regular grasses and tevin, straw, and things like that. So even though normally the lion needs that meat, that's why it has the teeth the way it does. They're sharp teeth to be able to tear into meat and to be able to tear it apart. If it's just eating grain, you don't need that. It would turn into herbivore teeth, which is what a cow has or a sheep has, which are the regular teeth you have. Human beings, obviously, are a little bit different. You have the canines, right, the ones that stick out a little bit. Then you have the regular teeth that chew the regular food. You can tear things apart with your teeth, but you can also just chew it the regular way. Salad by the back and meat in the front. I'm just telling you, that's how you normally should eat. You don't eat meat in the back, right? You don't eat salad in the front. You shouldn't eat salad at all. But if you're going to eat salad, you should go ahead and make sure that it's in the back, because that's what those teeth are for, and it makes sense to be able to do it this way. But Wolfson says, for this year, all carnivores just ate these grasses, the herbs, the same with everything else, the produce. But there's a problem. You have a lot of vitamins that you get from eating meat. A carnivore cannot make up those vitamins by eating grass unless it eats a ton of those grasses. There are certain vegetables that you can eat to make up for this, but you have to eat a ton of this stuff in order to go through. The idea is that carnivores on the teva ate more than what normal herbivores would when they're in the field, because they needed to make up for those vitamins, the other things that they were lacking in not having any of the meat. This is the opposite, the very, very opposite of the bracha of eating a little and being satisfied. The remez here is that wild animals cannot be satisfied. Wild animals have to keep eating. They have to keep going. They can't stop themselves. They have to keep doing it. They eat what they want, when they want. A human being, and the lesson to be learned is, a human being has to control himself. And to be able to say, this is what I'm having, and I don't need to have any more. And not only do I not need to have any more, I'm not taking any more. I'm going to be okay with what I have, and I'm not going to do anything more than that. That's the difference between a human being and an animal. An animal goes from one place, let's just say you have a huge, one of those food things in town, you know, where like you go to McCormick Place, and there's unbelievable amounts of food, and let's pretend that the whole thing is kosher. I think there is a kosher fest, right, on the East Coast. That's right, we hate the East Coast. But if you were on the East Coast and you went to Kosher Fest, so the idea is for a Jew to go from one place to the other, from one place to the other. Come on. That's not what we're here for. We're not here to satisfy everything and then, oh man, I can't eat more, but if you give me like a little bit more cake, maybe I'll be okay. That's not what we are. It's not who we are. That's not what we want to be. We want to be the guys who are saying like, yes, we'll have what we need in order to do what we need to do, but you don't go any further. And this is the bracha, Rav Wolfson says, the difference between us and animals. That's the concept. The Chidah writes about the Haggadah in his Haggadah, that in the times where Yosef Kovo, when he was the Rav of Salonika, there was a man who was known to have a maggid. What does that mean, a man known to have a maggid? There was a man who was able to tell things that were unbelievable, and he had like a malach that was telling him things that he would say to the other people, and all the people would hear it, and they'd be shocked. This guy knew everything. This guy was able to tell them secrets that nobody else knew. So everybody was talking about this guy. They said, this guy's awesome. He's a tremendous rabbi. He's doing all these crazy things. And the Rav of Salonika, right, the Rav Rav Kovo, was asked his opinion. What do you think of this great rabbi? What do you think of this great Kabbalist, what he's doing? The Rav asked one question. He said, what does he eat and what does he drink? How does he eat and how does he drink? When he was told that he eats and drinks a ton, the Rav Kovo said, then there is no way he's getting that from a malach. He's getting it from the satan, because a person on that stature of kedusha should be able to eat a little bit and be satisfied just with that amount. When a person gets to a certain level, you no longer need to overeat. It's a famous story. I don't know if anybody here has heard it, but one of the Rabbanim that's close to Reb Chaim Kanievsky once asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky, he's by him all the time, said to Reb Chaim, he said, Rav, I'm with you all day long. I see what you eat for breakfast. I see what you eat for lunch. I see what you eat for dinner. Reb Chaim Kanievsky is not a very skinny guy. Okay? He's not a very thin guy. He said to him, what's going on? like Snicker bars underneath their shtender? Like, how is it possible? You're not eating anything. I'm sure Reb Chaim eats, but there's nothing, he's not eating a lot. So he said the most cryptic answer you've ever heard in your life. Torah is metukim midvash v'nofes sufen. Torah is sweeter than honey and out of the greatest honeycomb. That's what Torah is. So to speak, as if I'm eating the Torah that I'm learning, and therefore I'm getting bigger from that. That doesn't make any sense. Whatever Reb Chaim meant by that, I have absolutely no idea. But his point was, is that you don't have to eat a lot, right, in order to be satisfied. Maybe Reb Chaim Kanievsky gets so many nutrients from the little bit that he eats because he's eating it in the right way, as opposed to us who eat like pigs and we know it, we understand it, right? So maybe he's getting more out of it. He's fuller from that stuff that he eats. Maybe that's the idea. But there's so much more over here. Reb Leib, the son of the Chafetz Chaim, says he remembers once that his father sat at the Shabbos table. Okay, his father, the Chafetz Chaim, was sitting at the Shabbos table. They brought out the meal. As they brought out the meal, he looked and he said, "Oh, geschmack flesh. The meat looks delicious." It's a totally loose translation. Okay, but either way, but he said, "Geschmack flesh." As soon as he said that, the Chafetz Chaim said that, he looked at himself, disappointed in himself, shook his head, and refused to eat the meat. He wouldn't eat the meat. When he saw that he had a taiva for the food, which he felt, again, this is not for us. When we look at it, we say geschmack flesh, then you just ask for seconds. That's what we do. Just not thirds, but you ask for seconds. But when he saw it, he said to himself, "What do I need this for? What do I have to do this myself for? I don't need this. I don't have to do this." That's what he was really saying to himself. He should control himself. That's the idea of what we want to control yourself to get there. Tiferes Yonis and Rabbi Yonis and Eibshitz says, there's a line by Rus and Boaz. If anybody who's paying attention, well, will be paying attention on Shavuos, when we read Megillas Rus, the line is that Ruth was given a gift by Boaz. And it says, Batochal, and she ate, Batispa, and she was satisfied, Batosar, and she was left over. She left over a little bit. Question, how much did Boaz give her? It seems it was nothing. 6 barley beans, barley kernels. That's much. That's a lot of stuff there, Boaz. It's a nice little gift. But 6 barley kernels. Batochal, Batispa, Batosar. She ate, she was satisfied, and then she left over something. It's amazing. She left over from the tiny little gift that Boaz gave her. Because the pshat is by Ruth exactly this. The bracha was given to her to be able to understand this is something that's more than just about my stomach and what I'm eating. It's about finding that even the small little things, I can be satisfied even with that. She was a tzaddikus in that way. But listen to this medrash. The medrash asks the question. It says, how is it possible? How is it possible? It says, either one of two things happened. Either Boaz gave her a miracle, that when he put the seeds in her hand, or whatever it was that he gave her, they kept multiplying in her hand. So Boaz was causing the miracle to happen, that she kept getting more and more and more. So it's like an everlasting gobstopper, right? Where you keep having it, and it just keeps lasting and lasting and lasting, right? But it kept refilling. Every time you took out, like all of a sudden it refilled. I should say it that way. No. The first opinion is that Boaz did it, so it's not the everlasting gobstopper. It's like you have a big handful of barley, you take some, and then all of a sudden it fills itself back up. Take another handful, and it fills itself back up. That's not a gobstopper, that's nothing. Charlie didn't get that, obviously. That's not like that, right? But then there's another idea. Maybe it was Rus, that every time she ate, right? Every time she ate, it filled her up so much that she felt like she couldn't have anything anymore. Like one little seed felt like it was 100 seeds inside her stomach. So which one was it? Was the miracle from Boaz, or was the miracle from Rus? So the Medrash means the following over here. There's a concept that you cannot derive benefit from mice and nisim, from miraculous events. And if you look throughout Tainus, there's sort of like a theme that goes on in the third parak, the most awesome parak in all of Shas, in my opinion. But again, you're taking the opinion of an Am Haaretz, so you have to check with other people that are more awesomer. But in the third parak of Tainus, the whole idea behind the entire parak is mycenism, don't worry about mycenism. Mycenism are crazy, they're awesome, they're rabbis that can do anything, don't worry about them, those are not the important things in life. That seems to be the theme throughout, and the idea of we don't need rabbis to get us rain, we should daven and bring rain ourselves, that's the idea. If Boaz would have given her a certain amount of grain, and every time she took from it, it automatically filled itself back up, that is a clear and utter miracle, which means she would not be able to benefit from it. She might be able to leave over, but she wouldn't give it to Naomi, her mother-in-law. She wouldn't give it to her. And the reason why is because you can't benefit from Isa Nisim. You can't benefit from miracles. So that seems like it wouldn't be the right way. On the other hand, if he gave her a certain amount and she ate some of it and it expanded in her stomach and made her feel full, Cool. That's a miracle that nobody can see. The fact that it happened inside her stomach, that's not a miracle. That just happens to be. She got full after a little bit. You've eaten sometimes, and after having just a tiny little bit, you feel full, right? That's happened before. So too over here, maybe not you, but most people have, right? So you've had something like that. So if that happens, so too, okay, the idea is this could happen. You could eat a tiny little bit, and that's enough, and that's that. Says the Gemara, since she gave it to Naomi, since she gave her a little bit of the seeds that she left over, it must be that it wasn't a miracle. It was something different. It expanded in her stomach, and that was enough. I'm going to translate this into the Hanukkah miracle. You know, in the Hanukkah miracle, there's a big machlokas between the poskim about what the miracle was on the first night. How is it a miracle on night number one? Right? Because everybody knows the oil lasted for the next 7 days, but the first night was not a miracle. That's normal. Oil lasts for a day. So why in the world did they celebrate the first day of Hanukkah when the miracle was the last 7 days of Hanukkah? So there are 100 answers. There's even a sefer called Ner Lamea on the 100 answers to this question. Okay, that's there. But there are two famous answers. And one answer, each answer is one side of this equation. One answer is that it went down and then it filled itself back up. That every time they used it, it filled itself back up. That is a clear and utter miracle. The other way of looking at it is, there was a tiny little bit of oil, and it just lasted. On the first night, even when it went down, it never extinguished itself. It just lit that tiny little bit. They can say that in different ways. Maybe they only lit 1/8 of it each night, or whatever it is. That's depending on the Beis Yosef and the Taz. But the concept is, are we talking about a miracle that's straight out right there in front of your face, blazing right there in front of your face, or a nes nistra? That's the same idea that you have over here. So what do you think they did with the extra food? If they were satisfied with just a little bit. Remember, they grew tons of food. It said, Daish Yasigas Batsir and Batsir Yasigas Zara, that they're going to be working the whole year long on all of their grain. They're going to have bumper crops every single year. So what do they do with all that if they, as we just said, they only needed a little bit in order to become full? So what's the obvious answer? What do you think they did with all the extra food? They sold it. 100%. They sold it. Now, to keep market prices up, they might have done what Canada does with their extra grain. They might have destroyed it. Canada will destroy a lot of their extra grain to keep market prices down. It's the same thing with diamonds. In order to keep the market price for diamonds up, all the diamonds that are found, right, are in certain areas and they're not being let out, so that we make sure that there's only a certain amount of diamonds that flood the market to keep the prices at a certain amount, right? You always want to keep it at a certain amount to be able to do that. It's the same thing over here, right? Maybe they went ahead. The Malvim says, go ahead and sell it, make your money off it, and that's that. Since you're satisfied with so little, you don't need to do anything more. Ayelis HaShachar says, it could be. There may be different people with different amounts. Maybe some people have tons of extra food to sell, right? Others won't make as much grain in their fields. They'll need to be blessed by how much they eat. I think it's obvious. I think this pasha. There's two brachos here. There are certain people who are farmers. Those guys are going to grow a ton of extra grain. They might not get this bracha. There are other people who aren't into fields and grain and everything like that. They're merchandisers. They're doing other things. Those guys will be satisfied with just a little bit. You know how much of a bracha it is to be working and to only have a tiny little bit and be done with it? I'm just giving you as an example. I'm Baruch Hashem, I work in the yeshiva where I get breakfast, lunch, and dinner if I want, anytime. And that's a tremendous bracha. When I go to Eretz Yisrael, right, and I'm running from yeshiva to yeshiva to yeshiva to speak or to go around from one place to the other, I don't have a normal meal schedule. There's no way that I can just go down and sit somewhere and be able to have a meal. I'm running from one place to the other. I just don't have time to be able to have a normal meal. So like if you have one tiny little thing, like a Clif Bar, they told me. If you get a Clif Bar, Clif Bars have all the essential vitamins and nutrients that you need. They just taste horrible, right? But if you have it, right, you'll be able to be fine, and then you'll have everything there. Can you imagine having all the nutrients you need? They have this nowadays. The problem is that people love food and we're animals. But they have this. You could have one pill every single day, and it would give you everything you need for the entire day. The problem is you don't feel full. You're not going to feel full. But you'll have everything you need. You'll be satisfied. You just won't be happy because we all love the taste of food. But they have it. They even came out with it. I remember 10 years ago in National Geographic Kids, when I first came to Chicago, I saw it in the National Geographic Kids. My kids get it, but I read it more than they do. So I was reading it. It talked about these people in Japan that were able to figure out they pumped up these strawberries, these huge strawberries. They're like this big, with everything you needed for the day. They woke up in the morning, they ate a strawberry, and they were done. They had everything taken care of through that strawberry, and the amount of energy that they got through the strawberry was enough to be able to last them the entire day. No coffees, no other type of caffeines. You didn't need anything else. You didn't have it. You had everything you needed from that little strawberry for the entire day. This is the bracha of this parsha. Vatocha vatisva vatosar. For them, it didn't work. You know what happened? They all gained weight. Why? Because they were eating that strawberry. They gave them everything they needed. And then they kept eating throughout the day. So they just all gained weight. And they all became bigger. By us, hopefully, this will be a bracha. That la'asid lavo will have this one thing and it'll be taken care of. No challenge. We don't need it. You won't need it. You'll be like, challenge, please. I'm coming just to learn. Right? That's the reason why I'm coming. Nothing else. Why would there be any other reason? There'd be no need for drumettes. There's no need for anything. You'd be fine as is. It makes it a lot cheaper for us. But think about it. It's a brilliant, brilliant maneuver where everything changes. Maybe that's the bracha over here. I think that's the idea behind it. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh gives a bunch of different explanations to try to explain this. And I want to go through it. You guys can probably think of examples on your own. And I'd like you to think of some because these are pashut ideas. And if you have one, definitely raise your hand. Tell me what you got over here. The first explanation he says over here is that there are many people who see tons of food on the table, can't stop themselves from eating more and more until they've satisfied their every desire. The bracha here is that they'll control themselves. Now remember, we've been saying that a tiny little bit will be enough. Here, the bracha is a little bit different. It's not that a tiny little bit will be enough. It's that you will say, I don't need any more. You'll no longer need more than that. You'll sit down at Shalit's, you'll have a free gift card for a dessert, and you'll say, please, I just had a massive steak and some sushi. There's no reason for me to have dessert. Now that is an open miracle. An open miracle without a question whatsoever. To be able to sit down at a restaurant when you have a free dessert and you're a Jew and not take the free dessert? There's no way. That's not human. That's definitely not a Jew. There's no way. There's no way, right? And then to even offer it to somebody else, would you do that? Because what if you come back the next time? I want my free dessert, right? But to be able to say, I don't need this. I don't need this. I have a rule. I can't tell you that I always abide by it. But if I eat a fancy, and I will tell you, it's also because I'm cheap, okay? I'm going to tell you that as well. But if I'm going to eat at Shalit's, I'm choosing two of something. It's either going to be I'm eating the meal and a dessert, or I'm going to have an appetizer and a meal. To eat the appetizer, the meal, and dessert, I feel like I'm going to burst. I'm absolutely going to destroy myself. We don't have that. That concept, says Or HaChaim, is that you'll not only be able to control yourself, you're going to be happy doing it. That's the concept behind it. Rav Sturmbach adds that when you have tons of food around, and it's a problem by us nowadays where we're richer than we've ever been before. I can't say for sure in times of the second base of Mikdash or the first by Shlomo Melech, but we're so rich now. We have so many extra things that we never dealt with in our lives in Golos that we're sitting here and we're sitting in elegant houses with unbelievable cars and we have great businesses. We have unbelievable acumen to be able to do these things. We're so different than what the world was like. I'll tell you the following. And Rav Sturmbach mentions this, but I'm just saying it as a side. I'm more impressed with the CEO who drives a Toyota Camry than I am with the guy who drives a Tesla. That's not putting down anybody who has a Tesla. I think Teslas are awesome cars, and I really, really do want to play with that computer. It's an awesome computer, right? Especially while I'm driving. I figure that's really good. Let the car drive myself, and I just play games the entire time. That's awesome. But I'm more impressed with a guy who is a CEO who's unbelievable. He has unbelievable amounts of money. And that's what he drives. To me, that's like unreal. How do you have a person who does such a thing? There are very few people that I know, but those people, I look up to them like no tomorrow. I sit there and I wonder, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, I don't know why I don't have a Lexus. And I'm sitting there and looking at these people, and I'm saying, it's unbelievable. Of course they can afford these things, but they don't get it. Those are the most impressive people out there. That's the idea that comes out from this Or HaChaim HaKadosh. On the other hand, the bracha could be that your food is so delicious that you won't need to feel full. Why? Because you'll just want more and more of it. The Gemara says in Megillah, Ravcha l'besumi shchicha, right? Everybody finds room for dessert. I think you know that from a very sick man who used to say, there's always room for jello, right? Very, very sick person. But it's true. We always find room for dessert. In this way, this concept is the food is so delicious and nutritious, you'll want more of it. So here's the concept. I know it seems to be the exact opposite of what I just said. I guess it's not the overeating part, but the way the Or HaChaim is putting it is that you're going to look at it and you're going to say, that's something that's so nutritious, so good for me, I think I'm going to have it. I think I'm going to go ahead and take it. Not abuse it, not overuse it, but that's the concept behind it. The Shach and the Or HaChaim add something else. A bigger bracha is that you won't get sick from the food that you're eating. For anyone who when you get older and you have issues when it comes to, you know, eating and what you can eat, what you can't eat, there are certain foods. I remember, listen, when you're 17 to the age of like, I don't know, 18, 19, 20, you can pretty much eat anything with impunity and you won't get hurt and nothing happens. And then all of a sudden it changes as time goes on. This is the bracha that won't happen. You won't have to worry about what you're eating and how it injures your body. The bracha is that there will be healthy people everywhere. And I'm assuming that comes with, you understand what to eat and what not to eat. Because the truth is, look, I know Coke is delicious. I know. But we all know that it kills us, right? We all know that. I mean, we can admit that freely, right? We do know that. It destroys everything in our body. We know what happens. I'm not convinced by those little tests that they do, you know, where they put something in Coke, like a tooth in Coke, and they leave it for a year, and you take it out, and it turns into a bunny. Like, those don't. That doesn't mean anything to me whatsoever. Like, I, if you put anything in water for a year, it's going to melt down into some gel. And the scientists out there are like, no, they're not. It's going to be different. I don't care. There's no way that that's that bad. But I know as soon as I take the Coke and I see it bubbling right there and it goes down my throat and it feels like acid and it looks like acid and it is an absorbic acid, right? And it goes to my, I know that I'm killing myself. I know it. This is a taiva that we all need to get over. And you should know, I was not a Coke guy. Growing up until I was 16, I think, I never drink Coke in my life. Amazing, right? I would go to a restaurant with friends, and I'd be that guy who's like, can I have milk? That was it. I was that guy, right? In the Fleischik restaurants, it was a little bit questionable, right? But in the Milkik restaurants, everything worked out well. I would be the apple juice guy. I was the guy who was in that. No, I couldn't drink anything like this. None of this stuff. I couldn't drink anything with bubbles in it. But because of peer pressure, there were enough people that were just sitting there saying, like, you're ordering an apple juice? And, you know, you're in your teenage stage. When you're teenage stage, you're just like, is that not cool? No, kid. It's not cool to order an apple juice at a restaurant. So then I was like, okay, I guess I'll have a Coke. And I forced myself to have Coke until now I'm addicted, right? It's a problem. It becomes an addiction. It becomes something evil. And I understand it. But it's still something, says the Shach, says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, that a person has to work on to be able to make sure that it's a little bit better. We're going to have a time where everything's nutritious, where everything makes you healthy. You're finally going to be able to go through it. But not only that, the taste. Your food is going to have a certain taste that everybody else is going to love. Meaning, we know that wheat doesn't really have more of a taste than any other wheat, right? I mean, I'm sure there's differences in different regions, how the wheat tastes and what you do and etc. There's going to be something that we're going to have. Maybe it's through the nutrients in the ground. Maybe you're going to have a grapevine that's right by. Somehow your wheat, at this time this bracha takes place, is going to taste better than anybody else's wheat. Your bread is going to taste better than everybody else's bread. It might just be flour and water, but it's going to taste different. Who knows what you're going to do with it, but you don't even need the spices for it. Your food is going to be well known throughout everywhere. This is really given by Rava and Abaye. If anybody knows the Dreams Gemara in Brachos, in the 9th Perek, when it goes through all the different things which happen with Rava and Abaye and Daf Nun Dalid, it's an amazing thing that Abaye told them, your business is going to taste sweeter. Everything is going to be a lot sweeter. Your meat, your drinks, everything's going to be a lot sweeter. That's another idea over here. The Shari Aron says, from the Rishonim, that a lot of people are spending a lot of their time planting and plowing and reaping and then winnowing and so and putting everything together, and it took a long time. People weren't able to learn. They simply put, they were working in the fields all day long, so they just didn't have enough time to learn. What are they going to do when they want to sit and learn? What were they going to do then? The bracha is, says the Shari Aron, the bracha is that you will be satisfied with that tiny little bit, similar to what I said before with the business. But Rabbi Yonason says, there's no way. There's no way a person's going to live a life like that. Can you imagine a life where you're sitting and working all day long and you're gaining, you get money, etc., but you're not able to sit and enjoy the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you? It can't be. There's no way it's going to be like that. So he says, rather it's the following. You're going to have enough with just the little bit that you have. You're going to want to run back to the base medrash and learn a little bit more Torah. Your meals are going to be so short. No longer is it going to be a 3-hour meal on Shabbos. You'll have a 10-minute meal on Shabbos, then you'll run over to the base medrash to go learn something. And everybody will be with you because everybody wants to sit and learn because you're fine with just a tiny little bit. I mean, I know what my Shabbos table is like when you bring out the challah and all the dips, right? And then you have soup, possibly fish, right? Then you have a regular meal. And then you sit there, you have dessert. It takes a long time to get out there. You have a 4-course, 5-course meal. It's a long time to get out there. And I get tired as anything. Because if your normal meal consists of one little thing and one little, you know, two little foods or whatever it is, and then all of a sudden on Shabbos, you're adding on more and more and more, that's hard. It changes everything about you. That makes you more tired, which means you're going to want to rest on Shabbos. Here, it's the opposite. It goes the opposite way. Rav Avadia Yosef. Did I tell the story about Rav Avadia Yosef? We're staying by this Rav's house, right? I didn't tell you the story.
It's such an unbelievable story. I heard it at the Aguda Convention here in the Midwestern Aguda Convention. Such an unbelievable story. Rav Ovadia Yosef, there's nobody. It's like, you're dealing with a tzaddik beyond tzaddikim. I wish I would have met him for more than just 1 second. It's like one of those things where I kept saying, I was always in Har Nof, and I was sitting there, and I'm like, I should really go see the Rav, and I didn't do it enough, and it was the silliest thing I've ever done. Rav Ovadia Yosef went to New York. I forgot the name of the Rav that he went to, but he stayed by a certain Rav, and he asked him if he could see the room that he was staying in. So he went, he showed him, like his third floor room, whatever it was, in Brooklyn somewhere, showed him where the room was. So Rav Ovadia Yosef went up, he looked around the room, he said, beautiful, is there a place where I can learn? Do you see like a separate place where I can close the door and I can turn on a light and it won't disturb the Rabbanit? So the Rav said, really nowhere. The room is one big room. There's nowhere where I can just block it off and stuff like that. So the Rav turned to the closet. He said, what about that closet? So the rabbi who owned the house, he looked at the closet and he's like, I guess, let's look at the closet. They open up the door to the closet. The closet is an area that's like this big, right? Just around this area, just around like that. Just big enough to put in a chair, like one of those plastic chairs. You know, you put in a little plastic chair and then a tiny, tiny little like bench. So the Rav said, perfect. They put in this little chair, right? Rav Ovadia Yosef put in the little chair and then he took his little bench. He piled it high with Sfarim, right? And he said, perfect, thank you so much. Turn on the light and close the door. So the next morning, when the rabbi got up, so Rav Ovadia Yosef was already out of the house. He went to Vasikin or whatever, wherever he was going. So he said to the rabbanit was sitting at the table drinking tea or coffee, and said, how was your sleep last night? She said, beautiful. My husband last night spent the entire night learning in the closet. Learning in the closet. Rav Ovadia Yosef spent all Friday night, after the meal was over, in the closet learning, in a tiny little closet with the door closed, no ventilation, and he sat there for 8 hours sitting in a chair learning until he got up to go to Vasikin. Unbelievable, right? So when he told this, the rabbi told this story over to Rav Ovadia Yosef's son, so Rav Ovadia Yosef's son said, that doesn't bother me. My father never sleeps on Shabbos. He doesn't want to waste a second of Shabbos on anything that's not learning. So that doesn't affect me. That's obvious to me that my father didn't sleep on Shabbos. But that he'd spent the entire night in a closet, that's the first time my father's ever done something like that. That's the most unbelievable thing. Again, I am not expecting that out of all of you, and I don't want anybody trying this. Rafi, you hear me? I don't want you doing this on Friday night. That's not for you. Yeah. No, it's not. You. It's not a closet. It's a bigger room. I understand, but I don't want you trying this anyway. This is not something for us to be able to emulate. Maybe when we're Rav Ovadia Yosef, when everybody calls us Rav Ovadia Yosef Jr., then maybe you can go ahead and do that. But until that point, I don't think it's going to be needed. But it's an unbelievable line. Rav Chaim talks about this as well. Okay, let's do one over thing over here. How much time do we have? Okay, let's start from Tosefes Bracha. Cain was punished that he would wander throughout the entire world looking for food, and he would never be able to stay in one place. That he was punished, nava nod ba'aretz, to travel everywhere. That whenever he needed food, he would have to go from Persia. The curse was given to the first people, that when they used up the nutrients of the ground, right, the nutrients of the ground would be gone. They'd have to go from one place to the next place. They'd have to keep traveling from one to the other. That happened for over 1,500 years at the beginning of our time, from Adam Rishon until Noah came along. What happened by Noah? Does anybody know what Noah created that changed everything? The plow, right? This person is going to console us. Noah was able to create a plow that overturned the ground, allowing the nutrients to come back into the ground so they could reuse the ground over and over and over again. That was a big bracha that Noah was able to come up with and stuff like that. What other people do when there's a hunger and you can't get around things, is that they have to travel. We see Avraham Avinu traveled because of a rov. We know that Yitzchak Avinu traveled because of a hunger. We know that Yaakov Avinu had to go down to Egypt because of a hunger. We know that this has happened all the way over. Elimelech, by the times of Rus, also traveled because of a hunger. The bracha that we're being given is that you'll have a little bit and it'll be satisfied. Even when there's a hunger, you'll be fine with the little bit that you have and you won't need to go anywhere else. That's the bracha. There's no need to travel elsewhere, that you'll be fine with a little bit and that'll be satisfactory for you. You won't need to go somewhere else in order to get it. Just the little bit that you have, even with the world, whatever's happening in the world, this will be good enough when it comes to such things. Now let's get into quite a bit of stuff when it comes to Ramazan. What are the hints behind this pasuk? What can you learn from this pasuk? Take it out. Aside from the regular bracha, what do you get out of this? Lechem refers to Torah. Says the Shach, when we say you're going to eat your bread and you'll be satisfied, is that you'll easily be, not just want to, you'll be able to acquire more and more Torah to the point where you'll feel satisfied that you're doing everything that you can. You can never feel satisfied that you've learned enough Torah. But you can feel satisfied that I can't add anything on to my day. I can't do anything more right now. You have to steal time to begin with. And once you get to the point where you say, you're satisfied, I can't do anything else. This is great. The amount of learning that I'm able to do during my day while still making a parnasa and still doing everything else, that's when this bracha is fulfilled. That's the idea of what we're referring to over here. I know many businessmen who have a seder during the day, either early in the morning or right after they finish. I know many rabbanim who are sitting there and make sure that even though they're a rav and they're in theory learning all day or teaching all day long, they have a set seder for themselves. They have to learn because they themselves need to learn. They forget that. People forget that sometimes. Even rabbanim have a chiyuv to learn every day, not just teach and not just give over to other people, but to mamish sit down and learn. The Shach says this idea is to have hours, as much as you can, to be able to add on to your learning. I know a few businessmen who are zocha, that they became very, very wealthy, very, very quickly, and they stopped working in the mornings. They joined a morning kollel. They joined a kollel somewhere to be able to sit and learn for 2-3 hours every morning before they go to work. And then they do everything they need. But they understood, I'm making a lot of money. If I work a full day, I can make even more money. But what do I need that for? I'm going to sit and learn for a couple hours every day. That's an amazing bracha. That's the idea of batocha. You'll have enough bread. You'll ochel kima, and you'll feel satisfied. You'll feel like, oh, now I'm really using my day correctly. That's the concept of what it means. And bishavta levatach. And that means you're going to live in surety and things are going to go well. The Rabbeinu Ephraim adds that it doesn't have to be just Torah learning. You could add on mitzvos, says the Rabbeinu Ephraim. You could do hilchos challah. For those who are involved, I know usually this is a womanly duty because they're the ones baking the challah. Why not? Start making challah yourself. Make challah yourself and be mafrish challah. Take that mitzvah of hafarshas challah. I know it's a mitzvah for the woman. That doesn't mean that men can't do it. This is a mitzvah that you yourself can do at any point. Take off hafarshas challah or do birchas amazun and benching correctly. And you'll be blessed with tremendous hatzlacha. That if you just started a little bit, you try to get involved a little bit, you'll end up getting tremendous, tremendous bracha from it. That's the concept of what you can get from over here. And we'll end with the following. The Tiferes Shlomo, the Radomsker, says, you should have kavana when eating your food to bring more parnasa throughout the entire world. Here's the idea. You have a little bit of food, you say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just like I'm able to eat this food and become satisfied, may it be your will, Yehi Ratzon Mufanecha, that everyone in the world should have enough food and be satisfied. That is not relegated to just Jews, obviously. That everyone in the world should have enough food to be able to live. That there are refugees, there are people in the middle of nowhere, there are people who are living in lands starving, there are people in America that are starving, that everyone should have the food that we need. There is no question there is enough food in the world to go around. There's enough food in the world to be able to feed everybody. Somehow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he can do this. I can't, maybe Bill Gates can, but you need somebody who's a multi-billionaire. Somehow figure out a way where everyone benefits, everyone gets something. Says the Tiferes Shlomo, that's what you should have in mind when you're eating your food, that it's not just about you. We've been dealing with it almost selfishly, saying, here's what we do, here's what we get. Eat a little bit, and everyone is satisfied. Everyone becomes satisfied. That is a tremendous bracha, and what Rashi is referring to over here in a remezdik way, not in pshat, but in a hinting way, here's what you can get out of it. All right, guys, we'll stop with this for right now, but our ideas were, what do we understand from these words? V'achaltam lachmacham l'sofa. We have 8 different explanations as to what this goes through. We have Rashi. We explained that through the Rav Yonos and Eifshitz and the Chidah. We mentioned the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. He had 2 different explanations. We mentioned the Shach. We mentioned the Shari Aron, the Tiferes Yonasan, the Tosefes Bracha, and the Shach as well. Shach's other answer. We'll end with this right now. Have a great Shabbos, everyone. Mm-hmm.